Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Naz and Malik are African-American teenagers living in Brooklyn. They sell lottery tickets and Catholic saint cards on the street to earn extra cash. Normal kids, they chat about religion, morality, and just being young, gifted, and black. They're both Muslim, but Naz is more devout. And they have a secret they keep on the down low. They're lovers. So when an FBI agent begins to follow them around, wondering if they've been radicalized, they don't know what is the biggest threat. Arrested as a Muslim, shot by the police as a black man, or coming out as gay to their families. Naz and Malik is also the name of a new film just released on DVD and VOD. It stars the charismatic actors Kerwin Johnson Jr. and Curtis Cook Jr. as Naz and Malik in their first feature roles. It's written and directed by Jay Dockendorf. Both the actors and the directors are already winning prizes all around for this touching and realistic story of triply marginalized youth. And I'm very pleased to have Kerwin, Curtis, and Jay here by telephone to tell us more about Naz and Malik. Hi, Curtis.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good. Hi, Kerwin.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Okay, this film is a slice-of-life movie about one day in Brooklyn. Your performances struck me as very real life. How close are you to Naz and Malik? How close are their lives to your own? So let's start with Curtis.
Malik is an interesting dude, man. I put a lot of myself into it, honestly. But honestly, at the same time, he was the opposite of me. So I actually really got to play and act. I like to think I'm pretty nice. People have told me that I'm a pretty nice guy. But I was able to, like, really get on that side of myself where, like, I didn't have to worry about the consequences as much, which is cool, which I wanted to do in life but haven't been able to really do, you know, because I feel some type of way. So playing that was dope. And just being silly and wanting to have fun, that's me, you know. That's what I always do, man. I'm a big kid. So I was pretty close to Malik, despite not being Muslim and despite not being gay.
Right. And how about you, Kerwin?
Yeah, you know, I agree with what Curtis said. You try to be as transparent as possible with the character and try to put as much of yourself inside the character and have fun with it and you know, try to portray the most authentic character you can. But, you know, I'm not as passive as the character, passive-aggressive as him, and I try to be a little bit more forthcoming and forward with how I feel. But, you know, you try to put as much and have as much as fun as you can and as fun as you can.
Mm-hmm. So the two characters, Naz and Malik, Malik is sort of the bad boy and Naz is the good boy. Can you talk about the characters? Let's start with you. Yeah.
So Malik, man, he's this guy, this young kid that grew up in a very nice home. Have my mother and my father, they've been around and have emphasis. You know, we're smart people, you know, very smart family, living in a brownstone in Brooklyn. Parents have great jobs. And I'm one of those kids that's actually pretty much a normal kid, you know. You can have all that good stuff and still make your mistakes as a kid. So I'm out there just living life, man, and I'm a go-getter. If I decide I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. I'm going to put myself into it. I'm going to make it happen. Now, it may not always be the best thing to go and get, but nonetheless, I'm going to go and get it. You got to give me credit for that. You know, I have oomph. And I speak my mind, man. I want to be heard. I want to be heard. If I talk, man, you need to listen because I'm trying to tell you something, man. And it might help and it might not help, but I'm trying to get something, man, and I'm going to get it. That's Malik, man.
Okay.
And he cares. He cares.
And how about Naz?
Yes. Naz is a more reserved character, more a little bit more mature. He's an older brother. He's definitely, which is kind of ironic because he's passive, I guess, when dealing with Malik. But I guess, you know, being someone that's older and more mature and having to deal with more adult situations, you look for that outlet to have fun and just be young, and have someone kind of there to guide you, and I guess that's how he is. And just being kind of watching and observing things, that's kind of what he's about, and having fun as well.
So moving to the issues, has either of you in your life ever encountered the police or the FBI?
Definitely. Not the FBI, but, or at least I didn't know if they were FBI or not. Definitely. But not as a Muslim person being put afoul for radicalism. That's not my portrait.
And how about you?
You know, no, I've never had, fortunately, I've never had any run-ins with the police or the FBI. You know, I've known people that have, but personally, no, not me.
Okay, and finally, this is the first movie you've appeared in. So starting with Curtis, what are your plans now?
Well, this is my first feature, full-length feature film that I appeared in, the lead. And my plans now are just to take this momentum and run with it, man, because it's something I've been wanting to do since I was a little kid. So I'm trying to capitalize on this opportunity and just have fun and do what I said I was going to do, you know?
And you?
Yeah, you know, I want to continue growing and learning more as an actor and doing more, like Curtis said, riding this momentum, but definitely getting myself out there more and working more and doing more.
Sounds great. Thanks, you guys, for talking to me, and I'm going to talk to Jay now. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Darren.
Thank you so much.
Hi, and here's Jay calling from New York City. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks for including me.
No, thanks for being on our show. So talk about good timing. In New York City, just a few days ago, a landmark lawsuit was settled called Raza versus the City of New York, about the NYPD surveillance of Muslims in the city and the discriminatory profiling the police have been doing since after 9/11. So could you talk about this and how it applies to the themes in Naz and Malik?
The practice of surveilling Muslims in New York has been going on for 15 years, and at some point in the early 2000s, it seemed to have really boiled over the point where it was so over the top, so prevalent, that it couldn't be avoided. The Associated Press articles from 2012, the one that Pulitzer that year, were a big influence on the writing of the script and the story that we told. The fact that the FBI and NYPD were surveilling, you know, college student groups, high school groups, teens were infiltrating mosques and sitting as undercover agents through long sermons. All of these circumstances felt so dramatic, so poignant, unjust, and ripe for dramatization that it was hard to write about anything else.
So that's what inspired this movie?
Yeah, so that's part of what inspired it. The film also, of course, touches on a central love story between two young men. That story was more inspired by my experience of living with a closeted Muslim man through a random Craigslist sublet who was keeping his true identity from his family while living with his partner in Bed-Stuy. I asked if I could interview that couple for the basis of the screenplay, and they agreed. And then at the same time, you know, we were living in this part of Bed-Stuy that was under surveillance. Reports were showing plausible. My roommate was under surveillance for some period of time in some way or shape or form. And these factors came together to create a template for a story, which Curtis and Kerwin and I felt was important to make or dramatize and fill in, and that we could make an interesting film out of. There were other factors that inspired the movie as well, but really I think these two are the most important.
So you said that you went to Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn to talk to people about this. Is this where you shot part of the film?
Yes, the film was shot on location in entirety. And I think the beginning and the end of the film, it really Acts 1 and Acts 3 take place in Bed-Stuy. The second act
J moves Street.
To downtown Brooklyn and then parts of Fort Greene. And then the characters ride the subway back to Bedford-Stuyvesant. And the subway line that runs through Fort Greene and Bed-Stuy, the AC, is a big part of the film, too. We're on that constantly, and I know it's various trains and stops very well.
How did you do it? Is it sort of a shoot as you go, or did you go through lengthy arrangements to get a car cleared for that?
Well, no arrangement was particularly lengthy, and in the case of the subways, it's not actually a legal requirement anymore to clear a car. After 9/11, there was a law in the books for about 10 years that forbade anyone from filming whatsoever on the subways. I think they were concerned that potential terrorists would come and infrastructure. But that law was taken off the books shortly before the filming of the film, the movie. And we had a producer print out the legal code, and she had the relevant section highlighted. As long as we didn't use a tripod or external lighting equipment, we were cleared to film without permission by the law. And so, you know, we would inform people that were filming and tell them, like, you don't want to be in the film. If you wouldn't mind moving, that would be fine. If you don't move, fair warning, you may be in a movie. And a lot of people were very willing to appear as extras in the film that way.
I wasn't even sure whether they were extras or whether this is just people happen to be there. How about the man in the station, the eccentric guy?
Well, he was based on a real person that I saw.
Right.
Who, to me, when I first saw him, felt like the epitome of the New York subway system. He was just angry about his train being late. He was on the verge of a nervous breakdown, and he treated everyone else in the subway as his own private audience in a self-written and self-directed and self-performed one-man show. And that, to me, just gave everyone a sense that day that we are all in this together. There's kind of a collective consciousness about living in New York that comes from these chance encounters with loudmouths in the subway. And I think, you know, sometimes that can be irritating, but most of the time I'm very appreciative for the chance to have a window into a perfect stranger's mind.
And one thing that sets the movie apart is its very authenticity, the authentic feeling of, for example, in the mosque. Was that an actual imam leading the service or an actor?
No, well, that actually was an actor who had been an imam and who was fluent in Arabic and who could oversee that sacred ritual with confidence. We're really grateful that he came into casting when we were putting this together, because it made me feel so much better about filming it on the day of, that we were able to trust in him to add that level of authenticity that is so important when you're doing something like that.
And finally, what do you want viewers to take away from this film?
Well, I think that there's a lot in the film that you could take away that I didn't even necessarily plan. And I think I'd like to let the film speak for itself in terms of specific scenes. The film is primarily a portrait of two young men who I don't think are seen in film often enough. People from communities that are too often voiceless or whose voices are distorted by the mass media without consideration. And so, you know, making this film with Curtis and Kerwin and then spending the time to hopefully get it right as possible was part of our process, but is also, I think, part of the text of the film to some degree as well.
Well, I think you did get it right. It's a very interesting
movie. Well, I appreciate you saying that. I hope so.
Thanks a lot for talking with me, Jay.
Hey, thanks, Daniel. We appreciate it.
Kerwin Johnson Jr. and Curtis Cook Jr. are the stars, and Jay Dockendorf, the writer and director of Naz and Malik, which was just released on DVD and VOD from Wolf Video. This is Daniel Garber, the movies, each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.